Welcome to the Live Up podcast, where we watch the movies from our youth to see if they live up. We will review, discuss, and score the movie in question to see if it lives up to us as adults and whether it lives up to kids today. I'm Jess Latterman.
And I'm Amanda Treat. Hey, Jess, it's been like at least a week since some little misogyny troll wrote profanity in our comments section.
See you
right? Next
Tuesday.
I had this really good high school teacher, Miss Markin, who used to say, profanity is the attempt of a weak mind to express itself.
And I like that too.
The weak minds, it seemed, they didn't like us talking about Bill Murray. We were complimenting him and they didn't like it. And you know who they really don't like us talking about?
Who, Amanda?
Harrison Ford. So, on today's episode, it's the final review of our two-part trilogy. Let's leapfrog right over Temple of Doom. We're reviewing Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
Two-part trilogy.
I don't think anyone will be surprised by this, but Jess, why are we skipping over Temple of Doom?
Yeah, I love the concept of a two-part trilogy. I think there are other trilogies.
It's a two-part trilogy.
It could also be two parts. So, this is a Live Up podcast, and part of the fun is watching movies that we're not sure lives up to our memory of them, but it's always in the positive sense. Like, is it as good as I remember? So for me, Temple of Doom, it's like, don't even bother watching it because it was like total trash the first time. So like living up to what?
Yeah, I mean, it would live up to your memory of it being garbage. I think that's how I framed Troop Beverly Hills.
I know. I mean, I guess we could do a whole other series of, like, does it live up to the trash?
Does it continue to disappoint? I need to tell you, I occasionally go out to John Williams concerts that he does at Tanglewood in Western Massachusetts, and he plays all his greatest hits, and all these kids come show. They dress up like Harry Potter and show up for this, and it's a lot of fun. And the last time I was there, he likes to talk to the audience, and he gave this whole speech about how sometimes he writes what are his favorite pieces, composes a beautiful soundtrack, and then hands it off to a movie that turns out to be crap. And Temple of Doom was the example he held up. He was like, all right, and now we're going to play March of the Slave Children, which is actually a poor title, but like a really good piece that John Williams wrote, only nobody ever talks about that along with like the Emperor's theme for Star Wars or Schindler's List or, you know, because the movie was crap and so nobody paid attention to the soundtrack. It does have a good song in it. That's the nicest thing I can say about Temple of Doom.
Yeah, and it had a future Oscar winner that won the Oscar last year, Short Round.
And it wasn't Harrison Ford.
Oh, poor Harrison Ford. I think actually the Indiana Jones theme song, or his theme song, is the best. It's actually my favorite. Out of the Star Wars, out of Harry Potter, I think his is the best. It's just like, immediately I'm like, yay, every time I hear it.
We could talk for hours about this, but yeah, we should probably get back to the movie at hand. So Jess, what is your personal history with Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade?
So we should remind listeners, actually, we reviewed Raiders of the Lost Ark, I think is mentioned as the two-part trilogy. And in that episode, which you should all go back and listen, I talked about how I couldn't distinguish between Raiders and the Last Crusade, like which movie was what in my memory. And now rewatching Last Crusade, I realized the majority of my Indiana Jones memory is this movie, is Last Crusade. So I basically took all of the good parts of Raiders and just mushed them into my memory of Last Crusade as just generally Indiana Jones. So I saw this in the theater. I remember watching it a ton. And I, of course, we watch Raiders and oh good God, we watch Temple of Doom, but we watched this one the most. So I was most familiar with this one. And so after we watched and reviewed Raiders, and I won't spoil it for listeners who haven't seen it, but we were like not super kind to that movie.
Oh, but the internet was not super kind.
Yeah, they weren't. They don't.
Movie. So yeah. we got what we deserved.
So thinking about that, I've been really then dying to see this, to be like, okay, this one's got to be my positive, good memory of this. And then I sat down and watched it with Isaac. And even Lily watched like the last third of the movie with us this time.
Oh,
an improvement. Yeah. And not to give it away, but my son did say we had to split it over a course of a couple nights. And when we were about to watch the second half. He was like, this is the best night ever. He was really excited to see the second half because he was very upset about me stopping the movie halfway through because it was way past his bedtime. Didn't want to get in trouble with Elena. Anyway, that's my rambling history of this. But what about you, Amanda?
So I have sort of the opposite experience where I saw Raiders a ton. I even have a DVD copy of that.
But not a Laserdisc?
Last Crusade was, I think, on TV a lot. I don't even know what channel it would have been on because we didn't have the fun cable until I was like in college. Yeah.
I think it was on TV a lot because I do think I watched this in sections.
But that was the thing. I always saw like clips of it. I may have seen it end to end before, but like this is the first time I can remember seeing it end to end. So all those pieces are finally being put in a chronological order for me because it's like, oh yeah, no, I remember him and Sean Connery in the sidecar and like chase scene. And oh, I remember there's like a, not the Hindenburg, but that they get in a blimp and
iconic
like,
scene.
Random.
Yeah.
But never really connected. How did we get from the motorcycle to the blimp? You blow up a lot of shit.
A lot of shit gets blown up.
That's how you get there. So in a weird way, this viewing was almost like they released a new Indiana Jones movie for me. Only he's young again, and it doesn't suck. So
it's like, not CGI Harrison Ford.
So, yeah, it was nice to watch it end to end and not walk in halfway through and go, okay, here's the part where Hitler autographs his book.
Right. This is almost, though, I guess it's so interesting that we're different because there are parts of Raiders that it felt like the first time I had seen it end to end, even though I know I have. For Last Crusade, watching this, the first few frames of a scene, I just remembered the whole thing.
So cool. I mean, we had opposite experiences.
I know. I'm a little worried about that now.
Into our scores.
I'm a little worried about that because sometimes when one of us has seen it more, it's not great.
There's definitely a nostalgia factor. We haven't quantified that yet.
Yeah, because now we're like separating the movies. They're not like one collective memory.
Yeah. Well, for anyone else who hasn't seen this end-to-end ever or in a very long time, Jess, would you like to give one of your plot summaries of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade?
I will. So if you kind of forget the distinction between the movies, I'm going to try my best. So Indiana Jones, just think of him as a returning iconic hero. He's still the worst archaeologist in the world, possibly. We can talk about that. In the Last Crusade, he comes, I think, even more of a believer. And he resolves his daddy issues running from Nazis, basically. So it's like therapy, fight or flight style. And the Nazis are still the bad guys, but Indy only kills who he needs to this time.
That is, that's a good point.
Yeah. It probably, you know, there's so much hijinks, I think, with these movies. Not that the plot itself is immaterial, but it's all very similar.
No, you could definitely trade certain scenes from Raiders into this movie. I mean, they recreate
some of them too. So
I was reading a book about the making of all movies.
And oh, wow.
Yes. And actually, a really cool thing in there. I mentioned in our Raiders episode that I used to work for Leslie Dilley, who won an Oscar as the art director on Raiders of the Lost Ark. So there was like pictures of him when they were filming Raiders, which was really cool to see in this book.
What's the book called?
Don't put me
I was just going to give it a plug.
In the other room. I mean, I think it's called like The Making of Indiana
I'll put it
Jones.
In the show description, okay, listeners, for you nerds.
It's a ginormous book. The librarian was laughing really hard because it's the size of a satellite dish that she handed to me. It was just like, what is this? When you get to the section about The Last Crusade, they immediately dive in on how the script was so completely different. The first draft was called The Monkey King.
What? Terrible name.
And it starts in a haunted castle in Scotland where Indiana Jones has to fight a ghost who's been murdering people, which is kind of a cool concept, but like...
That feels like a little off... I don't know. Is that off-brand? You either have real God or you have ghosts. I don't know. They all kill people.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of this movie, there's sort
of a ghost. That's right.
Just a really old dude. I don't know.
It's like the ARP ghost at the end.
So this first draft, you've got him fighting a ghost in Scotland, and then he goes to Africa, where he hooks up with a hot zoologist, and they rescue a pygmy from the Nazis with the help of a talking spider monkey who can turn people into stone.
Oh my god.
So that was the Monkey King first draft. And then they did a rewrite and added some pirates. What? And there was a lost city. There was a desert car chase or chase scene with Indy riding a rhino.
I feel like they did put like essence of this into there Crystal was a rhino Skull,
yeah but there was a rhino yeah. in this. So yeah, that was another nope. And then we had another rewrite where Indy was fighting gorillas coming out of the jungle. It was literal monkey gorillas.
That would not have stood the test of time for many reasons.
Yeah. And that was, they somehow had moved it to Mexico at that point. So he's fighting monkeys in Mexico. Wow. And then picks up a hot nun named Chantal. And the two of them go off.
That for real?
These are all real. Like, they had copies of, not like full copies, but they had like pages of these drafts. Oh, so you could see like, oh my God, they really were thinking they were going to do this. At which point they're like, hey, the Grail's a cool idea. I think it was George Lucas was like, let's add his father in there. And then that took a spin. You got a little bit of Scotland unintentionally, but not a haunted castle with a ghost.
Right. Scotland in human form.
You know, scripts go through a lot of iterations and rewrites. There were a lot of writers on this, but I think the movie we got in the end was way better than the Monkey King who can turn people to stone.
Indiana Jones fighting gorillas, because at that point it would be people in gorilla suits. It would have been like Babes in Toyland.
It would have been, yeah.
It would have been like the scene in Babes in Toyland. It would have been bad.
But are the gorillas holding Keanu Reeves back in the fight? Because then I'm all in if the gorillas are... Hold me back.
Yeah, I mean, wait, when this movie was made in 89, so Keanu Reeves was out there.
This is 89.
He's available.
He was. Yeah, he was looking for work. So let's talk about the movie they actually made.
Let's do it. So let's start with Indiana Jones Jr.
Yes, played by Harrison Ford. This is his third of these movies at this point, and I think he's more charming in it. Somehow,
I agree. I was worried about...
Possible.
I was honestly worried about what you would think, whether he's more charming, because again, I'm not sure where my nostalgia is or not. He's still charming in Raiders. Like, I mean, he's a very charming yes. actor. I love Harrison Ford, even though if we like beat up on Raiders a little bit. I think there's something to lugging around his hapless dad... trying to save his dad. It makes him even more charming and funny. I found him way more likable. He's not mowing down Nazis, which I know is like kind of generally acceptable, but there was a little bit less of that. He was just doing the violence because he had to. And he still had some great lines, like his no ticket scene. So just if folks don't remember, when
that's
so funny.
Yep.
He and his dad are escaping Berlin at that point, I think. And they get on a big giant blimp. They think they've escaped. They're like pinkies up having the tea. Harrison realizes that some of the Nazis are on there too, and they're looking for them. So he, of course, beats the crap out of the ticket guy and then pretends to be the ticket guy, throws the Nazi out the window, and then turns to everybody else and was like, no ticket. Which, by the way,
and they all look petrified.
Yeah, they're all petrified and start running for their tickets.
All right, quickly. That is a plot flaw that came up in a couple of places. Like, at one point, they're coming back from the castle that they sort of burned down. And there's a sign in the middle of the road that's just like, Berlin this way, Venice that way. And it's like, Venice is not the word for Venice in other languages. Also, why would you have a sign for those specific cities that are like 700 miles apart?
Why would you have a Venice sign in Germany?
Yeah, so there's definitely a lot of leaning in on for the English speakers.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, the no ticket line. I'm pretty sure that's not how you say that in German.
Pretty sure, but that's okay. It still had the effect. I think it still landed. My son laughed. This was the tell to me that he was more charming. So Lily only watched like the last third of the movie with me because she was so kind of caught up in the plot and him in the plot in a way. He wasn't an asshole to her anymore, or at least she tolerated him. So there's definitely smoother edges to his character in this.
There's the scene where they go down into the sewers and they get like covered in oil and they have to dive down into the disgusting water.
This is when they're getting to one of the nights.
Yeah, and there's like a fireball comes through and just crazy, gotta get out of there. And you just cut to a plaza in Venice. You see the manhole cover pop up and Harrison Ford pop out and goes, oh, Venice.
Yeah, that was funny.
That made me laugh so hard. It's just like, oh my God, I forgot he did that.
And that made me laugh too.
That's so good.
See, that's the classic Harrison Ford I know. And he has lines that he delivers like that in Star Wars too, which make him funny. My son laughed at that line too. It's very funny.
Yeah, that landed really well for me versus like other times he makes a lot of like really not mean sarcasm, but like the sarcasm has such an edge on it that it's just kind of like, eh, whatever. But like,
yeah. Oh, Venice. It's like he's almost enjoying
perfect
himself.
Perfect end to that caper. Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah. No, I thought he was great. And the climax scene of him, this is when they're at the final temple to get the, I keep forgetting the artifact name, the Holy Grail. The stakes are, I don't know if it's just the scripting or Harrison Ford in it. The element of Raiders that bothered me was that it was really just him whipping artifacts away from brown people, essentially, and mowing and killing people indiscriminately. And that really kind of bugged me. But for him in the temple, there's different stakes. His father got shot, and so he really wants to get the grail so he could save his life. So all the typical...
And we're on a very short timeline here because his dad's bleeding
right
out. So you gotta move.
You gotta move. So him, I think Harrison Ford as an actor and the scripting and the pacing is at its best when they set up those stakes. So Harrison Ford is still doing his thing where he's like swashbuckling through these different obstacles. Like he's following his father's notebook to like do these different things to finally get to the grail. That adventure just felt more fun because of that in a way versus in Raiders when he's basically just hacking away at shit to get at a gold statue that he basically steals from a native population. So there's... So, mm-hmm. Yep. You know, and Harrison Ford is still good in both of those scenarios and charming, but it somehow made him more charming in that last scene because the stakes were set up so well.
So there's a scene in this movie that I had seen before, forgotten about it, but rewatching it now, when they go into the library in Venice, mm-hmm. he basically writes the book The Da Vinci Code in that scene in the library where he figures something out very quickly that it's been misinterpreted and oh look at the stained glass.
There's an actual
number
he's
got his dad's book.
Whether it's Da Vinci Code or one of the prequels to it, where it takes place in a very similar church setting.
It's such a ripoff of this movie.
It is a ripoff. And there's even that society in Da Vinci Code that protects the artifact that showed up in this movie.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, it's such a ripoff of this movie, and it was shocking to me, like, oh my God, why did we all like buy and read that book?
You could have just watched this movie.
Yeah, there's an online John Oliver rant about how stupid the Da Vinci Code is, and like my brain just kept jumping back to that, like, oh my God, John Oliver is so right. Like, that movie wanted to be Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade so badly. Ugh.
That's so true. With that scene, I was watching with Isaac at the time. He got a really big kick out of, so Indiana Jones, of course, he's being destructive and he's like crashing through a floor and he waits to bash the floor while the librarian is basically stamping books. And so the librarian just like, as soon as he stamps the books, he hears this big crash and he then looks at the stamp like, what is that? Isaac thought, and he's 7, just to remind listeners, he thought that was the funniest thing in the world. And to the point where he even excitedly repeated that scene verbally to my wife, Elena.
Oh,
he thought it was so funny. Nothing to do with Harrison Ford, but yeah.
I did read that one of the original reviews from this was like, this is a perfect 10 of a movie for 12-year-old boys.
Yeah, Isaac's almost and there.
Scenes
yeah.
like that are absolutely why this is a perfect movie for 12-year-old boys.
I think this is where he just becomes timeless.
This is where Indiana Jones is at his best because the two movies that they've given us recently, you have really cranky, surly, older Indiana Jones. And it's like part of the part.
Like get off like, my lawn kind of Jones.
You don't want to see like an old man complain about things. And that's what the later two movies.
Wait, have you seen Dial of Destiny?
This movie. I still haven't seen it yet. No. Okay. The only opportunity to see it so far has been on some very long distance airplane flights. And I'm never in the mood to watch that on a small screen.
Okay. We'll have to record a bonus episode on it. You should see it. I thought it was much better than Crystal Skull.
Oh, that's good to hear. And there's no Shia LaBeouf. So.
Yeah, you have Phoebe Waller-Bridge instead, and she's really funny.
I would take her a million times over Shia LaBeouf. Actually, so speaking of not movies that are great because they don't include Shia LaBeouf, this movie I had forgotten, I think you'd forgotten, has a flashback to young Indiana Jones, and it's a appearance by River Phoenix, who I thought was great.
I forgot he was in this.
So River Phoenix, may he rest in peace. But I mean, he was a really good child actor into, I think he'd already, he'd been nominated for an Oscar before he did this. Like he, he had some real credentials going on.
Yeah, he was definitely well known. Even my 9-year-old self who saw this in the theater recognized him. I'm not sure from what.
I mean, he was like all over Tiger Beat and that sort of thing. But you probably would have seen him in Stand By Me.
Yeah, definitely. We should review that.
He was really good in that. We should do that. So he shows up. They do kind of this almost like an old-fashioned Western, you know, scene of people riding horses through like a national park. And he comes across some raiders? What do we want to call them? Like the precursor to Indiana Jones.
Yeah, I don't know.
Other stealers of antiquities. While he recognizes immediately that these people shouldn't be stealing something from a national park, he also seems to endear himself to the ringleader and picks up his style. Like that's where the fedora hat and the leather jacket, they do this crazy chase sequence across a circus train full of animals.
It was really amazing, the choreography of that scene. You have horses, you have a train heist, kind of, there's lions in it. I mean, it's crazy.
And those were real lions. Like they had to fake the giraffes, and they faked the rhinoceros, but they had two real lions.
None of the CGI bullshit. It definitely, I was like, whoa.
There were some fake snakes in the pile, though, because he lands in a whole pile of snakes, and they didn't want to, like, actually crush snakes. So he lands on fake snakes, and then they put real ones on.
Okay, but that was a lot of freaking snakes. At some point, the camera pans out, and you can see it as part of the circus. It's called something like Tub of Snakes. But as it was happening, I was like, I never questioned this, but why is there a giant vat of snakes on this train? That's insane.
So that book I was reading about the making of all these movies, they said the snakes just kept escaping. You know, they'd yell cut and then go to reset and be like, wait, a bunch of the snakes are gone. And then they'd have to go scatter around and find them.
That's terrible.
Yep. The snakes are loose again. Another day at work.
Not the same, but I've been on set with animals before with my time at Animal Planet. And there were definitely times, mostly when we were filming like the kitten halftime show for Puppy Bowl, where someone, you'd hear on the announcement, kitten on the loose, kitten on the loose.
Adorable.
It's way more adorable than a missing snake.
a bunch of snakes are just missing.
That's fucked up.
It's like snakes on a plane, but somewhere on this contained
set. But like
set,
in real life, I don't
snakes.
Like that. But that was a great scene. I mean, it was great opening. I mean, it definitely, my son who's 7 was in the movie right away. It, like you were saying, it's perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think for girls too.
Really good for a 12-year-old boy. Like, I mean, this is
perfect.
Your people here.
And even as an adult watching it again, I really appreciated how well done this was. All the real animals. There's the motion of the train. It was great.
Well, and even River Phoenix does such a good job of, he really studied Harrison Ford's mannerisms and his way of talking. And they do, the script gives them a bunch of lines that grown-up Indy has been yelling the entire trilogy.
Mm-hmm. The two-part trilogy.
You know, this belongs in a museum. Right. Our two-part trilogy of Indiana Jones yelling, this belongs in a museum. But I thought he was great.
Really. Yeah, it was fun. Well, I saw you ask this question in the notes, and I think we should address it. Now that we've covered...
I know where
young
we're going.
Young indie and regular indie. I don't know.
Middle-aged indie.
I love your question. And I want to ask it because I want you to answer first. Is Indiana Jones a slightly better archaeologist in this movie?
Well, we're 2 years later after Raiders took place. And I think things have been improved. But other areas, if we're doing a performance improvement plan for Indiana
he's
Jones
on a pimp.
Here, I think there's other... areas he has not quite mastered yet. Starting right off the bat with him dealing antiquities out of his classroom, you know, his office.
Almost
they
the
show
same
him
scene.
Going in, and there's just shelves of things he's taken from different locations.
Yeah. He like pulls, it's the same scene where he pulls out some artifact wrapped in like a rag from his desk. And it's just...
And, you know, because Marcus is popped by after class and he's like, hey, British Museum, you want this?
What you Yay. Got for me this time? I don't care how you got it.
That part doesn't really fly anymore. Didn't in the first one. So maybe let's do this performance review as a compliment sandwich. I was told that that was a
I like
appropriate
that.
Way to do it. Arias, he's improved. He's moved from I hate snakes being his catchphrase to Nazis, I hate these guys. So
that's better.
I would argue improvement. Yeah, okay. Nice job there. He's bursting through fewer walls like the Kool-Aid man. Like, we had some issues with that in Raiders because he so just kept destroying pyramids,
oh,
basically.
Oh, my God. Ancient Egyptian tombs were just obliterated in Raiders.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
There's some destruction here, but it's not all his fault.
There is. And, yeah, you said this earlier, too. He isn't murdering people mindlessly anymore. Yeah. But this movie does blow up pretty much every vehicle he touches. Like, they blow
it's
up
like his calling
boats
card.
They blow up cars, planes, like castles, sewers. They blow up the whole sewer. So yeah, there's still a lot of mayhem following him. On the areas where we still haven't seen improvement, he's still dealing antiquities.
I mean,
after class, you see Marcus pop by and be like, oh, the British Museum would love that thing in your pocket that you stole. Like,
I know.
Guys,
it's
come
like
on
still there. There's something, though, don't about this time around, keeping it out of the Nazi hands is more of like a, there's more clarity around that plot.
There is, but they show his office at the university and it's shelves of things he's
I know, it really is. It's unreal. Yeah.
He's got his own warehouse going on.
Yeah, you're right. He's still maybe slightly less destructive. But just to pinpoint one point of constructive feedback I have for Indiana and this PIP plan is, you know, he gets to, who ends up being the villain, I forget his name, Walter's house, who has part of a tablet. And the other part of the tablet is the shield on the Knight Templar. But he has part of the tablet. And so Indiana Jones is trying to read it better. So he dips his freaking finger in champagne and then rubs it on the tablet. Like, what are
yeah,
you doing?
That's probably not good archaeology like, technique just, right there.
I mean, that's no better than just, like, spit on the, like, on your sleeve and just rubbing it.
The one that got me, actually, they go into the library in Venice and they say, oh, this used to be a church and it was very important. And they bust through the floor, which your son liked a lot.
He did.
They get down there and they're in this oily water. And he snaps off some, they're in like a catacombs under the church. He snaps off some body's femur.
It's gross.
And dips it in the oil and lights it on fire and uses that as the torch. No. That's not okay. Like, we're not using human body parts as the torch to get through this scene. Like, come on, man. That's terrible archaeology. And that's not even like, oh, the piles of skeletons. Like, that came off of a shelf. That was somebody important down there, because they don't just put people in the catacombs and the fancy tombs and shelves and stuff.
Yeah.
Unless they're, you know, important. So
that was like
yeah, the femur the torch femur no torch. That's bad archaeology.
I mean, I feel like modest improvement. And then I'd say, like, at the end the temple does blow up, but it's not his fault. It's Elsa's fault the temple blows up.
And I will give him credit for that. We are doing the compliment sandwich here. By the end of this movie, they're scrambling around because they've dropped the Holy Grail. And if they can just reach a little further and Elsa tries to do it.
Yeah.
And they basically, like, drop her down to her death. But then Indiana somehow lands in the exact same position Elsa was in, like, a moment before, where he was trying to save her. So now his dad's trying to save him from the exact same fate. He's like, no, I can reach it. And his father says, just let it go. And Indiana just lets it go. And they leave the temple without dying.
Right. And without the artifact.
Getting chased by a giant ball. He just lets it go. And they leave the Holy Grail where it is. So, you know, room for improvement. But that was a learning moment there. So
it was a good job. Although I bet if the cup did not fall in a chasm, 100% chance of him shoving that in some rag. And
well, no, because he learned.
Oh, he can't. That's right.
The knight said, you can't take it past this point because don't cross the seal on the floor of the temple.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
The Holy Grail. And he learned a lesson there. He didn't try to cheat around it or, you know, cheat the gods or whatever. One thing I just popped into my head and then start laughing really hard at myself. That wouldn't have been a joke at all in this movie. The main female character in this is Elsa, and she's the one who couldn't let it go.
I love that. Do you think that some writer of Frozen saw this movie?
Was like, yeah, you know, at the end where Elsa can't let it go, let's do a whole movie where Elsa really
yeah, and she sings about it. Let's write the ballad.
I mean, we've had alternate stolen Disney plot lines, especially when we did Coming to America. So, like, just put this on the list of movies Disney's ripping off.
They're just watching old movies and writing songs about that shit they're seeing. That's what they're doing.
What if a blonde woman named Elsa just couldn't let it go? Yes.
Social plug at Live Up Pod. Now I fucked up the social plug. At Live Up Pod on all the socials. I will layer the Let It Go song to the scene of Elsa trying to reach for the cup.
Yeah, just let it go. Down she falls. Bye-bye.
Yes, that's coming soon to an Instagram account near you. Yeah, so, I mean, what do you think? Has he improved? I'd say modestly.
I think he's improved, but you phrased the question as is he a slightly better archaeologist, and I will give him slightly better.
Okay.
He's still not great, but he's
yeah, I think we need better. To keep him on the pip.
Yep. All right. We'll reevaluate in 3 months.
Although, having watched Crystal Skull, I don't know.
All right. Well, we have several other characters we want to talk about, particularly the other member of the Jones family who makes an appearance. And no, once again, not Shia LaBeouf.
Shia LaBeouf is almost on the Andy McDowell / Adam Driver list.
Oh, he's absolutely on the Adam Driver list. That guy sucks.
For listeners, if you don't know, Amanda for some reason hates Adam Driver. I hate, as we established in the last episode, I hate Andy McDowell. And I think we could both agree on Shia LaBeouf.
We also hate Shia LaBeouf. However, he just sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's not in this movie, so it's fine.
He's not in this movie. But Sean Connery is. What a great movie. Yes. So we have Sean Connery playing Henry Jones Sr., who, may he also rest in peace. Sean Connery was only 12 years older than Harrison Ford.
Oh my, get out of here. Oh, that's funny.
Yes. So they play it. I mean, I think Sean Connery does a fantastic job looking or making his physicality look that much older. Oh, yeah,
he's like a doddering old man.
You totally believe they're father and son, but that's Sean Connery kind of hunching over and walking a little, like, funny. And he's got his, you know, tweed suit and his fishing hat and his umbrella. And he looks like your grandfather, but yeah, he was 12 years older than Harrison Ford when they filmed this.
I loved him in this. I guess we're young enough. I've never been a James Bond person. I don't know Sean Connery as James Bond. I know him as Indiana Jones's dad. And I've seen him in other movies since, like Alcatraz and all that stuff. But this is the role that I was first introduced to him and that I first... Although we... Actually, maybe not, because we reviewed the original Robin Hood, where he comes in at the end as King Richard. This is the Sean Connery that I know.
Yes. That was a discussion that we had, because we were trying to decide, like, is Sean Connery a sex symbol for viewers of Robin
That's
Hood?
That's right.
He's definitely not trying to be that in this movie. He is fully embracing the I'm the grandfather. I am an archaeologist who is very like bookish, but also will open an umbrella and scare a bunch of seagulls to bring down a Nazi airplane. He's crafty. Yeah. He's great. I think he's great.
Yeah, to me, he softens the edges on Indiana Jones more than anything and makes Indiana Jones a better character because he has this like wonderful, hapless... Not a happy-go-lucky, but he's just sort of this doddering, like, kind of absent-minded professor. He needs to be saved all the time. He's basically the damsel in distress. And he's really funny at it. And he's also appalled at all of Indiana Jones's exploits. He's appalled by the murdering and the Nazi chasing and the guns and the whole shebang. It almost made him look ridiculous, Indiana Jones, and in some ways it made it better. Like, it made it feel better, all the murdering. I think where Karen Allen in Raiders complimented Indiana Jones, she kind of amped him up and went toe-to-toe with him, whereas I think Sean Connery was like a different type of compliment where he's just sort of softened Indiana Jones up, and I really liked it.
Softened him, but there is a little bit of a...
Yeah, there are like daddy issues.
They show him being not an absent dad, but like a disinterested dad in the flashback scene. There's comments about it sounds like they haven't been talking to each other for 20 years. And Indiana says something about like, well, I left and you never talked to me. And he says, well, you were finally getting interesting, you know, implying that he was not interested at all at this kid being his child. That making of book I was reading, they were saying how much Sean Connery brought to the script and was like, no, I think there should be a little bit of a rivalry between this father and son. And he's the one who added that what starts as a joke about the female character talking in her sleep to imply that he'd slept with her first.
Just really kind of weird.
Sean Connery was the one who suggested, okay, when they get caught by the Nazis, if you tie them back to back in the chairs and have them like hash out a conversation while everything's catching on fire, that would be funny, but also like for these characters who don't talk to each other, that closeness, like having to be tied to each other, is just a really kind of bringing a new level into their relationship.
Yeah. And
a very stressful one because they're about to burn to death.
They kind of have a laugh at the realization that they both slept with the Nazi woman, and in a weird way, it became a father-son bonding moment. I know that's kind of fucked up.
It really did. No. So, I thought Connery was great in this. I did read, they asked him to come back and play that character again in Crystal Skull, and he was like, no.
Oh, though that would have improved that movie.
It would have.
Because then you would have had him and Karen Allen, and maybe you don't even need the son.
After they both drink from the Holy Grail at the end of this movie, like, it implies that they're going to live for a really long time because that's supposed to be healing in the eternal life. I immediately thought, like, oh, no wonder they keep making these movies. Like, Indiana Jones is just never going to die. But the fact that they kill off his father, you never see it, but somewhere in between the third and the fourth movie, he's passed away. I guess it wasn't eternal
life. Yeah. Actually, my son picked up on that because he kind of thought, or maybe it was my daughter at the time, oh, that means that they'll live forever. Like, they were sort of going with that logic. And then we sort of had a discussion like, well, maybe that they have to stay there because it's part of the curse. Not the curse, but like, you could live forever, but you can't go past that seal.
All right. So we do have a female lead in this movie, but unlike Karen Allen, who's the love interest, this is more of a femme fatale.
Yes.
We have an actress named Allison Duty, who's playing a character I refer to as Dr. Elsa Schneider, the obvious Nazi.
I know. That down to the really stilted German accent.
I mean, she's Irish, the actress. Okay. So, like, that was her best. But, like, we knew that there were a lot of Nazis in this movie. But the second she appears on the screen, it was just like, oh, God, yeah, she's a friggin' Nazi. Like, how is he not seeing this?
I mean, when I was a kid, I did not pick up on that. And obviously my 7-year-old son, he did not pick up on that. He was confused at her, because throughout the movie, her character kind of then becomes conflicted about being a Nazi, I guess.
Well, so she reminds me a lot of the French archaeologist in Raiders, who is clearly the bad guy, but also really just wants to find the Ark of the Covenant.
Yeah, he's not pro-Nazi.
You know, that there's a competition going on there. I mean, she's ballsy. I'll definitely give her that. So the premise in this movie is that Indiana, he's looking for his father, who he knew was looking for the Holy Grail. So he goes to meet with this same professor, Dr. Schneider here.
Dr. Schneider slash obvious Nazi,
So yeah, she is a very invested archaeologist. And when they go to that library in Venice and open up the catacombs, she dives right in with no light at all. Like, they don't have flashlights, they don't have torches until Indy lights a guy's finger on fire.
It's so fucked up.
As you do. But they're walking through these, like, rat-infested tunnels, and she is there for it. Like, she really wants to see what's at the end of this. And yes, she is a spy, and she's on the payroll of the Nazi party, but you genuinely get a sense that she wants and needs to see all these artifacts for herself. Like, she's excited by the job, not so much who's paying her.
I mean, I feel like you're being generous. In some ways, listening to you, I'm like, oh, okay, maybe I should give her some credit. There's really not a knock on the actress, really. It's more just, it's disappointing, but it doesn't kill the movie for me. It's too bad that 8-9 years later, you go from a Karen Allen to Elsa the obvious Nazi as the female character, because yes, she goes down into the catacombs, but she is in heels and a tight skirt. And I'm like, listen.
Oh, and a white top. Let's dive in the water.
That's not the actress's fault. But I'm just like, listen, Hollywood. Karen Allen is a beautiful woman that you made plenty sexy in comfortable clothes.
But also, they made her do some really stupid things in Raiders, too. Like, you know that whole, she gets kidnapped in the basket and is yelling Indy at the top of her lungs? Like,
I think I'm more thinking of, like, the presentation of her. She's still presented as the beautiful woman she is. Whereas I feel like I didn't need the heels and the tight skirt. Like, it just felt like, come on, guys.
Yeah, they're just making a real femme fatale character here. And I, once again, the actress is working, like, doing a great job with what she was handed. I don't think these movies write female characters very well. There, I said it. The whole internet troll scene can come for me.
And I'd say they didn't improve much to Crystal Skull, where you have Cate Blanchett playing, like, essentially a robotic psychopath. Like, she's a Nazi too, right? Or Russian. She's a Russian.
No, she's a Russian.
Yeah, so they went for strong.
I feel like Cate Blanchett was just like, fuck it, I'm leaning in on this, and just went.
Yeah, she went full psychopath.
Like, it's such a cartoon. It's such a cartoon.
And I don't think you needed Elsa the obvious Nazi to be a psychopath. But, like, she's just nothing.
You know what, though? I think, and this is nostalgia right here, I think I always appreciated her being in this movie because coming out of Temple of Doom with Kate Capshaw playing the idiot blonde in that movie, I was just relieved.
Yeah, at least this woman has a PhD, so. But yeah, I don't think she made any impression on my kids.
Other than she won't let it go.
Yeah, that's funny. I will encourage you to watch Dial of Destiny, and I think Phoebe Waller-Bridge is a pretty interesting character in that. We're not here to pick apart that movie. And I think she had a hand in the script for Dial of Destiny.
Yes.
So, you know, I think that if that movie was successful, I would imagine, because, you know, we know Hollywood listens to this podcast. We would imagine that if that wasn't the flop that it was, that they would potentially hand the franchise to her, to Phoebe Waller-Bridge. They left it open for that.
There's another double-crossing character in this that we should probably talk about quickly. We have Walter Donovan, played by Julian Glover. He comes in at the beginning, or literally walks into a room that looks like a set from a 1980s soap opera.
It's really weird.
Like, I expect Robin Leach to just pop in there and be like, lifestyles of the rich and famous, but it's supposed to be 1938, whatever. So he recruits Indy to go to Venice, and then, like, big reveal that, you know, our missing project lead is your father.
Right.
And in part because I could vaguely remember what happened. It was just like, oh, the scene just feels like he's giving so much exposition.
Yeah. Classic.
Like, the guy
villain
just won't shut up. He just, you know, I'm talking about this and I'm talking about that. And it's like, all you needed to say was, hey, I sent your father on a mission. We lost him. Oops, want to go find him. Like, that would have done it. But instead, there's just, like, walking around the room and explaining things. And is this what I think it is? It is what you think it is. Let me explain what you think it is. Oh, my God. So every time he spoke, I was just like, exposition moves back. Oh, here he goes. Like, he just talked.
One thing I thought was funny is that Isaac, so eventually he gets revealed as the villain in a very comic book way. He's, like, sitting in an armchair that's like facing the other way, and then he, like, spins around to reveal himself. It's very funny, almost.
It's like Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget. Yeah.
Isaac was confused because, not to say that all old white men look alike, but he kind of thought he was Marcus for a second.
He does, yeah. He vaguely looks like Brody.
Oh, right, like Marcus Brody. So Isaac was, like, kind of confused as to, like, who he was. Small thing. Comic book villain, but he's not, like, a psychopath villain.
He's not, but he also, I don't know what he's doing in this movie. Like, he's not really needed. I think what probably happened, and again, I, you know, cheating because I was looking at the making of book, I think they originally had Elsa's character be, like, full-blown evil.
You could have combined their characters into Elsa. Let her run the
originally,
whole show.
Yeah, originally that's what
that
the character
been better.
Was, and then they split them. In part because at the end, they needed this guy to be the person who shot Henry Sr.
Yeah.
That they didn't want her to be so evil that she would shoot Indy's dad to make him go get the grail.
Just
to
remind listeners, Walter, the villain, shoots the Sean Connery character to basically motivate Indiana to go and get the grail to save him.
Yeah. Because they have to, they know that there's traps that they have to walk through, and they've already sent a guy in, and I forget what happens. His head gets cut off and comes rolling back, right? I don't think this character was needed. I think they only put him in there to make Dr. Elsa the obvious Nazi seem a little bit more neutral, even though she's a Nazi too.
I'm already liking this movie, but I think combining those characters would have made her more interesting.
You know what was a great callback to Raiders though? We get to melt a face off at the end.
Your favorite. Oh,
you know what, I love a good face being melted off someone.
Okay, what was a better melting face? And if folks don't remember, Marcus basically picks, well, at the end, Elsa picks the, purposely so, a very ornate cup as the Holy Grail, which is obviously she's doing this on purpose. Walter drinks it, it's the wrong cup, and he basically face melts into old age and dies. And then in Raiders, there's a Nazi who also melts a face. So, like, which one's better?
And he looked at the Ark of the Covenant. Yeah, so... they're done with two... I gotta go special effects nerd here. Two totally different techniques going on for melting faces here. The first one looked like it's like a stop motion, almost like wax melting.
Yeah, because you have the blood melting on his face, his eyeballs melt.
Disgusting. I love that so much, but it's like got a real Tim Burton, Large Marge vibe to it. So good. It's disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. So, all right, that's one version. And then by this point, they're almost perfecting that face morphing technology. Like, yeah, we're a few years away from that Michael Jackson black or white video. So the way they did this was they made three different puppet versions of this guy's face in various stages of, like, being decrepit. Mm-hmm. And then shot them and kind of layered all the film over each other. And then melted his face that way.
Interesting.
So it's done with... puppetry, which is
that's fun,
not quite stop motion, but like really that's it was clever. A cool effect,
and you have the hair growing out, the eyeballs roll back into the head.
It looked more realistic, if face melting off were a common thing that we were all very familiar with.
I mean, this is what, the second, third, this might be the third face melt.
I think the Raiders one is more grotesque and more comic booky, but I gotta go with that one. Just, it's so insane looking. But this one, I really appreciated the callback to let's melt one more face.
I do too. I appreciated that. I think it was a slightly creepier face melt. Isaac and Lily were a little grossed out by it. Like the first one, because it's comic booky, and that Nazi whose face melts is a psychopath. So you're totally fine with his eyeballs melting all over his face. You're just like, you deserve that.
Yes.
So this one was like a little creepier. I almost go with the Raiders one. Is like, I kind of like the grotesque comic book one better.
Yeah, I mean, Raiders is just bloodier. It's so much...
this one, though, is good. Gross. I remember thinking it looked cool when I was younger.
Yeah, advances in face melting technology going on here, people. It looks like a really good face melt.
Yeah, so kudos to the face melter. One funny thing is that Isaac got really nervous about when, after the face melting, and then Indiana Jones has to choose a cup. Like, Isaac was so nervous. Isaac's like, what is he doing? He's gonna choose the wrong cup. And he got like really kind of like scared that he was gonna choose the wrong cup.
Yeah, and the stakes aren't damnation. The stakes are Epic face melt.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a very visceral punishment for drinking from the wrong chalice. Yeah, we have two more, let's call them the crowd favorites, brought back from Raiders to reappear in this movie. If you recall Sala, he's the guy who got everything done, you know, your man who you can say, quick, we need a rope, we need camels, we need whatever, and he finds a way. We need a boat to get us out of Egypt.
He shows up in Dial of Destiny, too.
Oh, good. So it's John Rhys-Davies. He's a great actor. We discussed in our Raiders episode whether you should have a guy from Wales playing an Egyptian, particularly with their own family history of being colonial police officers from Africa. But okay, we moved on past that.
We almost got our cringe out of our system for Raiders, and I feel like I've almost forgiven it now by the time I get to Last Crusade.
Yeah, this character's iconic for the series. I love this character. And... the one thing, though, is I don't think they used him enough here.
He's not in it enough.
Like, he was such a clever resource in Raiders, and in this one, halfway through, Indiana's just like, oh, go get Sala and, like, meet us here. And he's in these scenes, but, like, he was almost sassy in Raiders.
They reserved those lines for Sean Connery for the banter.
Yeah.
Although you could imagine that Sala and the Sean Connery character could have had some really fun banter or ganging up on Indiana Jones. There's probably more they could have done there. Because I agree. I don't think he's as memorable in this movie. But he's still kind of, I like seeing him. Yeah,
like
on
it was
screen.
Fun to see him again. And then we have Dr. Marcus Brody, old friend. He was in Raiders. He likes to purchase things for the British Museum.
Yeah.
This movie, they made him look like this bumbling idiot. Like, he wasn't an idiot in Raiders. He was very academic. Yeah. He wasn't very adventurous. He didn't get to come along on any of the adventures in Raiders. But this one, they're just talking about how he gets lost in his own museum.
I think that's kind of funny. I mean, I remember that as a kid when Indiana Jones basically lies to the Nazis and was like, you'll never find Marcus Brody. He's had a 2-day head start. He speaks all these languages. He's going to melt in. And then they hard cut to Marcus Brody, like a white guy in like basically a seersucker suit walking around being like, does anyone speak English? It was kind of funny, I thought.
Yeah. I don't know. The thought I had this viewing, it was just like, should Indy even be trusting him with the antiquities he's selling him? He's probably gonna like trip and break half of them. I don't know. There's something else in this movie I want to talk about, which is the 2,000 rats that they bred, especially for the scene in the catacombs where they're running
that's
through the
insane.
Tunnels. Yeah.
The catacombs, which we've referenced, that's the femur torch. I mean, there's rats fucking everywhere. It's pretty gross. And even Isaac was like, ew. I mean, it's effective, though, on screen.
Oh, yeah.
I love that you're going to tell me some information about it, because I was like, how did they shoot this?
Yeah, so let's talk Hollywood rats.
Please,
people.
Tell me.
So I have seen this firsthand because I worked on Shutter Island, and there's a scene where Leonardo DiCaprio's character goes down to the tidal pools and they're just crawling with rats. And that was, you know, there's an option to do that CGI, but you can actually do that with real rats because they're very trainable. And
yeah,
there's people in Hollywood whose job it is to have, we have Hollywood rats. What scene do you need to shoot?
God.
So I remember when we were shooting Shutter Island, there was this woman who was a professional rat trainer. She came in and they had like weeks of rehearsals with the rats where she had a whistle and she had some treats and she was teaching them, okay, you got to run this
so
way.
Gross.
You got to climb up this wall. You got to climb over the actor like this. And they rehearsed the whole thing. I remember all the guys I worked with were absolutely in love with the rat lady because she was really fit looking. Yeah, so everyone loved the rat lady. She trained the rats and they did exactly what she taught them to do. And the scene looks really cool. And I remember my grandmother was like, how did they do all the rats? And I was like, those were real.
Yeah.
They trained the rats.
It's always better to me to have real animals. I know that there's all sorts of rules with animals. Like I said, I've been on set with them, but it looks better on screen.
Oh, absolutely.
The CGI stuff is really good.
You can
the
tell.
The technology is really good, but it's never going to be the same.
Yeah. No, so for this, they had 2,000 rats.
That's a lot of rats.
They were specially bred
that's
for this
so
movie
weird.
Because, or they got to be Hollywood rats. It's just for like disease purposes.
Like do they have agents?
Don't go
like,
find,
this is crazy.
You don't go find rats in the wild. These are like, you know, domesticated rats.
I mean, I'm imagining these rats like getting the rich and famous contract from the Muppet movie. Like, I mean,
oh yeah, like they're on like a velvet pillow eating a big block of cheese. Yeah, it's good to be a Hollywood rat. So they had to augment the sounds that they're making because, like, rats do make little bit squeaky noises, but, like, not the sounds that you're hearing in that movie when they're running through all these rats. So they took chicken noises and, like, made them higher pitched and played that over all the rats. But, yeah, it's very effective. Like, you see the rats, like, brushing up against their faces.
They're coming out of
the water.
Water
with them. She's trapped under that boat thing and they're like climbing in there with her. But yeah, you can absolutely train rats to do all of that. Kudos to the person who came in as the rat handler on this one. The rats look great.
They're just sort of part of the texture of the set. And it definitely has this effect of like you feel creeped out. Like you could feel it. You could you could like feel the sound of them. It's really effective and gross.
it's gross. Gross, but so I remember the rats on Shutter Island were like the cleanest rats I've ever seen. Like they
just look, I'm not,
they have little hair dryers when they're sitting on their velvet pillows with that cheese. Like
I'm not
saying
they're unsanitary or dirt. They just lend so much grossness to like, they really are in a sewer.
They're there to get that visceral reaction from the audience.
Would you rather walk through oily water with rats everywhere or fall into a pit of snakes?
Oh, that's a good question. I think In the real world, the rats are probably more likely to bite you than...
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
I don't know.
Ooh, this is a fun game. We used to play games like this back when I briefly worked in the Australian Outback, where my coworkers and I would be like, would you rather get bit to death and killed by a spider tarantula right now, or bit to death by a snake? Mm-hmm. Very divisive.
I think snakes are just creepier. You know, even when you were saying before that, like, the snakes are just like, where'd they go on set? The idea of a lost snake on set is horrifying to me versus a lost rat. But yeah, you're right. The rats will probably like nibble at you, but ill.
Or none of the above. Are smarter, I think, too. Well, overall, good practical effects with the rats. Now, ironically, I was reading the scene with the seagulls where they're all on the beach Those are not real seagulls because you can't train seagulls.
I didn't notice.
So what they did there was put a bunch of fake, like, stuffed seagulls all over the beach. And then when he runs at them with the umbrella, they release a bunch of white doves.
Good effect.
Had more trainable birds in that scene. But yeah, so some animals are really good actors and seagulls are not one of them. So
good to know. And now thinking, like, Crystal Skull did have a scene with those, like, killer ants or whatever, and they were CGI.
Oh, that looks so
fake. Yeah, you
fake.
And I talked about this in a bonus episode. We didn't like it because it just looked fake. You just have to have the real stuff sometimes. If it's, as long as it's not cruel to the animal, it just looks better.
All right, so we always like to take a moment to acknowledge anything that is cringy or sucks about these movies that we're rewatching. What else jumped out at you in this movie that was... meh.
I think I've gotten over any cringe from just recently watching Raiders. So I think the cringe level was a little softer. Yes, he's still a terrible archaeologist. It wasn't gratuitously violent. I know I really clutched my pearls in Raiders of the Lost Ark because not because I thought I should. I just really did not like the gratuitous violence. Total murder without a purpose, I didn't like. And there was less of that here. So I appreciated that. And I think the story doesn't need, like, random murder. So he just... did it when he needed to.
Yeah, this movie, I'd forgotten the scene. They're having a boat chase and they go right at a propeller. And he's got the bad guy in his hands. And I just thought, you know, he's never seen a propeller he doesn't like, but he doesn't do it. Like, he doesn't throw the guy through the propeller in this movie.
I know. And I didn't remember whether he did or not.
It was right there.
He could have done it. Chopped him up.
It's right there. Yeah, the second that I saw them going towards the propeller, I was like, oh, he loves his propeller.
Which is another callback to Raiders. But yeah, but he doesn't do it.
Yeah. Doesn't do it.
Yeah, so there's a little bit less of that. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it's G-rated or anything, but the violence level was like, didn't like bother me here.
This movie... actually is rated PG-13 and the other two are PG. That's because the PG-13 rating didn't exist for the first two. So it looks like it's worse, but it's actually
not. I would say there's a way more blood and violence in the others, in the first two.
Yeah, the other two are definitely more violent, definitely darker.
Yeah, this is not.
The one thing that annoyed me, the way they reveal that Elsa, the obvious Nazi, has slept with both of them is that they're talking about, like, oh, when did Elsa tell Henry Sr. this thing? And he just goes, she talks in her sleep. And it's subtle, but you see the reaction from Indiana and you're like, oh, his dad slept with her too. Ah, and it's funny. But then they just keep hammering on that the rest of the movie. And it's almost like they're explaining the joke.
Yeah.
Like, makes it so much less funny the way they just keep coming back to that topic and they have to, like, talk through it as a father and son and have a moment about it. And it's just like, oh, stop it. It was funny when he said it. Just leave it there. Like, people who got it, and kids didn't get it.
My son still didn't get it, even though they kept explaining it.
Yeah,
but he's too young. He's 7. But yeah, I totally agree. Yeah. I think they kind of beat that one to death.
Well, we also like to touch on the things that are awesome in a movie. Is there anything we haven't cited yet?
I think I would just say that this is the classic Indiana Jones to me. You have Indiana on a great couple of great horse chase scenes. Love Sean Connery in it. So if this was the only movie produced and you had a one movie trilogy, I would be okay with that.
Yeah, I agree with that totally. It's definitely sillier. Some of the silliness I said didn't work for me as well. But still, it's like a lighter version of Indiana Jones. And they make passing references to Raiders. You know, like, there's a design of the Ark of the Covenant down in the catacombs, and Elsa the obvious Nazi makes reference to it, and you hear a little dun, 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 yeah. in the back, and it's like, oh yeah, there's a Raiders yeah. down right there. And like what you said about him not killing everyone, we didn't even talk about this character because he doesn't say a lot, but there's that secret society that's protecting the Grail, and Indiana does not kill one of them by propeller.
He killed the other one.
And that guy, he killed everyone else, but he didn't kill that one guy. And that guy immediately is like, oh, okay, we're on the same side now that I know you're not looking for the Grail, you're looking for your dad. So cool, your dad's over there, and I'll see you in a later scene. And just, you know, they're buddies yeah. now. It's just like, what? But that's why you don't kill everybody. Right? Some of them could be helpful.
Yeah, gotta maybe. Save them from the propeller.
Yeah, so that actually, we should have listed that as a sign that he's a slightly better archaeologist. We'll put that on his
yeah,
pip.
Yeah, it's part of the
don't kill everybody
it's part of the sandwich. Yeah, I think we could move on to ratings. So first, we rate: does it live up to us as adults? It's a 1 to 10 scale. 1 being garbage, 10 being Princess Bride. So what do you think, Amanda?
So I was wrestling with this because it is better than I remember it being, because I had it all delivered in chunks over various viewings. Yeah. So watching it from start to end finally was really fun. The only thing I want to ding it for compared to Raiders is no Karen Allen.
Yeah, like, guys, gotta ding it for that.
That's the best yeah. part. I'm going to give this a 6.5, which I got to stop doing.
You and your 0.5s.
But that's my adult rating is a 6.5. Overall, this was better watching as an adult and being better than my memory had it.
6.5. It's lower than I thought you would go. And what did you do for Raiders?
Raiders, I was a 6.
So just a hair up. I'm going to go a bit higher. I wrote down an 8 for adults. I just really enjoyed it from start to finish as an adult. I'm definitely knocking off yeah. points, or at least 1 point, for Elsa, the obvious Nazi in her heels and tight skirt. This is where maybe nostalgia overtakes me, but I'm giving it an 8, and I gave Raiders a 4.
You gave Raiders a yeah. 4.
I just think this had a clearer purpose here. My pearls are not clutched anymore. I'm like, fuck it, steal all the artifacts, it's fine. So we can move on to the kids' rating. So same scale, 1 to 10. 1 being garbage, 10 being Princess Bride. And we sort of imagine, not ourselves back in the day when we saw it, but we imagine, will it live up to kids today if they sat and watched it? And it's hard because I just have the focus group of like 1.5 in my household. I don't know. What do you think?
This one, I'm going to go 7.5.
7.5
higher. So I actually like this better for kids than I do for adults.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
This is much more kid-friendly than Raiders. And like we said, everything explodes. Yeah. Oh, and there's secret tunnels. Remember in Clue, I said there wasn't
enough
secret
tunnels. There's plenty.
This movie has some pretty tunnels in it. So my kid point of view is that the more secret tunnels, the merrier. Yeah. So 7.5 for my kid.
Good. Rate. So I am going to go higher than I did for Raiders, but I said a 7. I'm not sure that they would go back to this character. It's just not out in the ether as much. But I mean, Isaac loved it. He related to him more so than Raiders. My daughter did. I think all I gave Raiders a 6. So slight improvement. I think this is a better version of Indiana for kids.
Yeah. Well, and you were saying that your daughter walked out of the room.
Oh, yeah. Raiders, she did not like
she
it.
She was tired
she
of it.
She thought Indiana was a dick. Yeah.
So the fact that she stuck around for this one, that's a sign that it's more kid-friendly.
Yeah. I'd say as parents, like, I think you go watch Raiders too, the two movies of the trilogy.
The two-part trilogy.
Wait, so what's our total? I forgot to ask you our total.
29 total. So we have 14.5 for adults and 14.5
for
kids.
Oh, wow. So I would venture to say this is higher than we rated Raiders for sure. But that's not the last question.
Oh, absolutely.
So the last question is just a yay or nay, up and down, up or down. Does this movie live up? We both have to agree. We were a split decision for Raiders, and I tanked that one. So
you did.
I'm going to just go first to give my redemption of I really do think this lives up.
I also am going to say this lives up, despite the fact there's no Karen Allen in it. Yeah, no, this is just a lot of fun to watch.
I think if Karen Allen were in this, it might get a 10. I mean.
Oh, man.
Yay, I was worried you were going to tank it out of revenge.
No, I'm not that petty.
All right, so officially, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade lives up. Hopefully this will stop any hate mail. But if you agree, love to hear from listeners, new and old. Do you agree? Do you disagree? What did we miss? Were we too generous? We're at Live Up Pod on all the socials. Let us know what you think. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
Yay, I'm so glad you liked it.